the A-10, slated for retirement in the 80s, still with us in the age of the digital battlefield. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. The U.S. Air Force A-10 Thunderbolt II has outlived its original life expectancy through a unique combination of maneuverability, low noise profile, anti-tank firepower, and the ability to bring pilots home when other planes could not. These capabilities proved so impressive during the first Gulf War that the A-10, also called the Warthog, earned a continuing role. Today, the Air Force is underway with a project to integrate the A-10 into the so-called digital battlefield, which is revolutionizing the way war is fought. In a Wednesday morning news conference, a status update was offered by Colonel James Ratty, 508th Aircraft Sustainment Squadron Commander and A-10 System Program Manager at Hill Air Force Base in Utah. Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Hansen, A-10 Requirements Director at Langley Air Force Base in Virginia, and Roger Ilgrand of Lockheed Martin Systems Integration and A-10 Program Director for the company based in Owego, New York. We'll bring the conference to you in two parts, today and tomorrow.
Good morning, everyone. Today, the press conference is going to be an update on where we are with the A-10C. The final software release is later this month, and when the aircraft are going to be fielded and placed into service. This morning, we have Colonel Jim Ratty, who's the A-10 Systems Program Manager at Hill Air Force Base. He will provide an overview of where the A-10C modification program is or has gone since August and the rollout. We also have Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Hansen, who's the Director of Requirements for the A-10 from Langley Air Force Base, Virginia, and he will also provide updates on where we are. He's going to give you an overview of the capabilities that we inherited because of the modification. And lastly, we have Roger Ilgrandi, who's the A-10 Program Director at Lockheed Martin Systems Integration in Owego, New York, and he will talk about software releases into flight tests. So Colonel Ratty is going to provide initially the overview.
Thank you, Marie. Thanks to everybody for joining in on the teleconference this morning. I'm really pleased to be able to have this opportunity to give you an update on where we are with the A-10. As you're all aware, last August we celebrated a rollout of the first production A-10C from the depot line here at Hill. It's been very well received by the field since then, and quite a lot has happened since then. Production is continuing apace. We've delivered a total of 47 A-10Cs now, and they're being delivered to Air National Guard units at Baltimore, the Maryland Air National Guard at Baltimore, as well as the Michigan Air National Guard in Battle Creek. The depot installations are going quite well. We've gotten our processes down pretty smoothly here, I think. In fact, one jet recently delivered 2 weeks early, and that's 2 weeks early to what some consider to be a pretty aggressive modification schedule. The installation hours are coming down nicely. We're getting down very close to what we predicted the installation hours would be, and the depot processes have proved out very well. The user community is quite excited about the capabilities that are provided by Precision Engagement. I think you'll hear a little bit more about those capabilities from Colonel Hansen. But we're quite anxious to get this jet and all its new equipment into the AOR and start using it operationally, and that'll happen fairly shortly here. Mr. Ogrande will give you an update on our test program and some of our recent software releases and how we're progressing with that. I'd also like to point out that we're on track to deliver the Situational Awareness Data Link, or SADL, in September of this year, and that'll be another big combat capability enhancement. So overall, we're very pleased with where Precision Engagement is going for the A-10. It is the biggest thing that has ever happened to the A-10 in terms of an avionics upgrade, and it really ushers in a whole second lifetime for the A-10 in terms of capability and relevancy on today's digital battlefield. So with that, I'll turn it over to Colonel Hansen to talk to you about some of the capabilities that Precision Engagement brings.
Right. Thank you, sir. From a pilot perspective, this is, again, as Colonel Ratty said, this is the biggest thing that's ever happened. I flew the jet back in the 80s when We didn't even have a digital clock in the airplane, so this is a pretty exciting time for us. Turn to the precision engagement program really gives us what I call the big six. We get the first, we get a fully integrated targeting pod integrated with all the functions of the airplane. We get the saddle modification, which Colonel Ratty talked about, which really gives us unprecedented situational awareness for an aircraft that doesn't have a radar or any other means to identify what's going on in the battlefield. It gives us the ability to drop some of our smart weapons, the JDAM, the Joint Direct Attack Munition, the WICMID, the Wind Correct Munitions Dispenser, and other 1760 bus-type weapons. We use the GPS guidance and other forms of guidance to be able to hit targets that we couldn't before. Number four gives us the digital stores management, where our aircraft now knows what's hanging on the wings, and we can inventory those and use several profiles and things like that to significantly increase our lethality. We also get a digital moving map in the cockpit, which we never had before. And then the last thing is our big cockpit enhancements. We get a new stick and throttle to give us true hands-on throttle and stick capability for the first time. We get two 5x5 multifunction color displays, which are very, very nice to be able to display all this new information. And we also get a upfront controller, all of which significantly reduces the heads down time for the pilots when they're doing their primary mission. And some hidden things we also get with the modification are a new DC power upgrades, which gives doubles the DC power available to power all these new things, and we also get significantly improved maintenance diagnostic options, which makes our maintainers happy. The airplane replaces some of the older wiring, and the airplane's able to talk to the maintainers a little bit better to tell the maintainers what's wrong with the airplane. So those are the big things that give us, and again, from the pilot perspective, it's even better than I expected. I've been involved in this program since 2000 when we kicked it off, and it really has exceeded all of our expectations. The pilots in the field love it, and they're excited to be able to take it to combat for the first time.
Okay. Now I'd like Mr. Ogrande to address some of what's been going on in the software development and test program.
Good morning, guys. Colonel, like I said, this is Roger Ogrande. Lockheed Martin and our industry partners have been working very hard to release the final versions of the software that we plan to field later this year. Most recently, we've been focused on the Situational Awareness Data Link software releases to flight test. In October and again and in February, we made our two significant releases for that function. It's gone exceedingly well in terms of how the pilots have received that function and how successful the flight test program has continued on. Just this past Monday, we made our final software release to ground test. That is the final version of the software that we hope to field later on this year. And this coming Monday, we will take that software and actually put it in flight. So what we do from there is we the Air Force, the combination of Nellis Air Force Base and Eglin Air Force Base, will take that final release of software and complete the full regression testing required for that right up through the end of June of this year. And then we go on to a certification for the software, which is a two-week certification in the July time period, leading to recommendations that the Air Force will make to the commanders to ultimately field the system. So we're in the final stretch of the PE initial software releases and getting that software ready to field.
Okay, thanks, Roger. Thanks, Ralphie. We appreciate that.
We'll hear more as our hosts field reporter questions on the A10C in a moment. This AeroCast is brought to you by Aircraft Engine Services, makers of the aluminum V220 and V300T engines.
How up-to-date is your aircraft engine? Automotive engineering has advanced so much over the past 30 years that you almost never have to raise the hood. Why can't an airplane engine be just as simple and just as reliable? Now it can. Check out the new V220 and V300T from Aircraft Engine Services. The all-aluminum construction of the V220 and V300T gives these engines the best power-to-weight ratio in their class. Earlier aluminum block engines suffered from excessive wear unless they were protected with heavy steel cylinder liners. In the V220 and V300T, each cylinder bore is surface-coated with Nicosil, an electro-deposited nickel coating containing hard silicone carbide particles. The benefits of a better power-to-weight ratio include increased range and higher useful loads, with less of a trade-off between fuel capacity and passenger or cargo carrying capacity. The AES V220 and V300T, as simple as a car's engine, but oh so much more fun to drive. Check us out on the web at VAircraftEngine.com or call us at 321-268-3718. Aircraft Engine Services, the shape of things to come.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR22 GTS, Cirrus's premium luxury ride that has come to define Cirrus aircraft as one of the world's elite. Every dream option from supple leather seats to an exhilarating 310 horsepower performance and speed come standard, giving new meaning to the phrase fully loaded. When flying the SR22 GTS, getting there is truly more than half the fun. To learn more, call 888-750-9000 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. Clarity Aloft headsets employ patented Comply Canal tips composed of soft viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. More than simple earplugs, these foam tips provide full-spectrum noise reduction and outstanding attenuation. This advanced technology is lab-tested, proving that viscoelastic passive noise reduction is superior to active noise reduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to our Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Platt. We continue now with reporters' questions at the Air Force's Wednesday briefing on the A-10C program.
Our first question from the line of Mike Fabey with Aviation Week and Aerospace Daily. Please go ahead.
Just a couple quick questions. In terms of going out to the field, I'd like to know when that's going to be, when the timetable for that is. And also a real idea of when everything's put onto the jet with all the different software upgrades and everything like that, what exactly will you be able to do? You know, can you take us through a scenario or two, what you'll be able to do that you can't do now? And is this something you expect to have? I mean, in the field means where? In Iraq, for example? And more specifically, if you get, in terms of software, I mean, how many lines of code are you doing? What have been some of the real challenges in doing that kind of thing? So anyway.
All right. This is Colonel Ratty. I'll begin by being a little bit circumspect on the fielding aspects. As I said before, we are delivering it to Baltimore and Battle Creek right now. We will deploy these aircraft and use them operationally, but we don't like to discuss the specifics of which units are going to which locations when. All I can say is that in the near future, we'll have this capability in combat.
When you say in combat, that means in places, for example, places like Iraq, I guess.
Well, you can probably connect the dots. Mm-hmm. It's you know where we're flying A-10s operationally,
right.
So that's about all I'll say.
Right.
As far as the questions for software lines of code and so on, Mr. Ogrande can address those, and I'll let Colonel Hansen talk about what kinds of things we can do now with the A-10 that we couldn't do before and how it decreases the pilot workload. So, Roger, you go first with some specifics.
Sure.
On the software.
Thank you, Colonel.
Sure. The precision engagement capability, as Colonel Hansen mentioned earlier, basically we started that program back in 2001-2002 time period. So we've evolved from a very much an analog system to a almost fully digital system now. Obviously, to do that, there's a lot of software that was added to the system on various operational flight programs. Just to give you rough numbers, we've gone from about 300,000 slots of code to about 1.5 million. So it's about a 5x increase in software that's actually on the airplane now. More importantly, the software is integrated. So each of these pieces of software or operational flight programs, OFPs, as we call them, speak to one another now. So the functional complexity of the system is really as a result of having integrated all those functions, and we like to refer to the fact that now the functions have handshakes with one another, whereas, an example, the targeting system software speaks closely to the digital management system software, so that the we obviously have precision targeting capability that we transfer over to the stores management system. So so about a 5x complexity or increase in software, and they basically an integration complexity in terms of how those things speak to one another. The other question you asked that I might try to address is some of the biggest challenges we had. Well, it was really earlier in the program. Think of trying to add this level of capability to a cockpit. And we had to work very, very closely with the pilots so that as the pilot used the capability, it was intuitive, much like when you work at your workstation in your office. Things have to be intuitive. So what we call the pilot vehicle interface, and how we demonstrate all the information to the pilot through menus and sequencing those menus, had to be intuitive. So we like to say we designed precision engagement around the pilot vehicle interface. After we nailed that down using many tools, including the systems integration laboratory at Lockheed Martin, we then focused on the functions that we would having to develop. So we developed the pilot vehicle interface first, and then we developed the functions that supported that interface and did so in a way that always included the pilot in a feedback as we developed software. So that process early on was probably the most challenging. More recently, we've obviously been focused on the functional issues in terms of flight test, but having locked down a lot of the pilot vehicle interface, it made that job, frankly, easier. So I would say that those were the biggest challenges that we overcame early in the program.
Thank you.
And then a follow-up, this is Lieutenant Colonel Hanson. The big capabilities, the things that are new for us are really the integration of the 1760 weapons, the JDAM and the WICMA. That is a completely new capability that we can never do before. Other things that are brand new are the moving map in the cockpit, which we've never had before also. But everything else, all the other modifications are not really new capabilities, but just make their capability enhancements. They make everything I do in the cockpit easier. For instance, having the moving map integrated with the data link, now I know where my wingman is, I know where the friendlies are, I know where the target is without even having to talk to anybody. All that is intuitively displayed in the cockpit for me on a very nice color screen. Yeah, that makes my job much easier. As Mr. O'Grande talked about, it's the having everything integrated together is very new. Everything we've added to the A-10 before is pretty much a standalone system. Now all the systems are integrated. So when I look out the cockpit and I see where my targeting pod is looking, I can slave my Maverick to that. I can slave all my sensors to a point of interest with one switch change on the stick. So adding the data link with the HOTAS capabilities, which I never had before. Sometimes on some missions, I'd spend half my time flying with my hands off the stick because I'm fiddling with my map. I'm trying to push buttons that are located in various places in the cockpit, heads down to type in things in the computer. All those things were hands off the throttle and stick. Now that's all on the stick and throttle. So that makes it very, very easy. And I spend much more time, even though I have all this fancy technology in the cockpit, I can spend much more time looking outside the cockpit because everything's so much more intuitive and all the information is displayed in an easy format for me to locate.
Line of Bruce Ralston with Air Force Times. Please go ahead.
Hello. I guess this is
Well, I guess maybe Colonel Hanson would know. I was curious what the timeline would be for the for us to start seeing the A-10Cs flying in red flags or air warriors, and also what the timeline would be for, say, standing up the first active duty squadron of the A-10Cs.
Okay, the modification timeline is about a 3-year process, about 3 to 4 year process, and so it's very gradual. Units will it takes about 6 to 8 months to convert a unit over from an A model to a C model squadron, and so looking at my schedule here, the first Pope Air Force Base 75th Fighter Squadron, actually it's moving down to Moody Air Force Base. It will be later this year is when they start their modification, and they will be they'll be complete about the first of next year. They'll have a full first active duty squadron will be complete.
Okay. And when do we expect to see, I guess, maybe the Michigan or the Maryland Air National Guard planes or perhaps the Pope planes flying in red flags or air warriors of this new?
Well, with the AEF schedule, as you're aware of, before any unit plays it to an AEF, they participate in some sort of AEF certification exercise like a red flag or a green flag or a red flag Alaska. And so shortly before those, both the units, new units, Moody, are both on the AF schedule in 08. And so I'd expect the first part of 08 you'd see. And again, those there are our CONUS units are so limited now that they're always participating in something. And so as soon as they get their jets and they become ILC, they'll be deploying to all these various locations for their exercises.
But there's when the units get the A-10C, they are full up, ready to go out and participate in exercises. They don't have to kind of stand back for a while and test them out. And
when they get their last jet, the squadron is really ready to go because that 6 to 8 month process, they're using that time. They do have to stand down a little bit because obviously they're transitioning airplanes and they have fewer airplanes on the ramp. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of a lull there, but it's that 6 to 8 month modification time frame. They're using that time frame to train all the pilots.
Okay.
So when they get to the end, they're pretty much ready to go. And for instance, Baltimore just received Baltimore and Battle Creek both received their last jets just last month, okay. And they're pretty much at that time they were ready to go.
Okay.
From a pilot perspective.
Thank you.
Our next question is from the line of Marcus Weisberger with Inside the Air Force. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. I was just wondering how many pilots so far have been trained.
Ralphie, do you have a number on that?
All of the pilots at Baltimore and Battle Creek are trained. At Davis-Monthan, where they're doing the training, and they'll be the first training squadron. They're in the midst of training right now. I would say they would have... just as a guess, between 10 and 20 pilots out there, plus all of our test pilots, our developmental test and our operational test pilots at Nellis Air Force Base, plus all of the Fighter Weapons School, all the A-10 pilots at Fighter Weapons School are qualified. In fact, the first A-10C Fighter Weapons School class is about halfway through right now. So the first A-10C weapons officers will actually graduate in June of this year.
My other question was, in July, is that the operation and utility evaluation? That's what I believe it's been called in the past.
Yeah, that's actually currently scheduled for the end of June, first part of July. That is correct.
You guys have held these in the past. It was supposed to be in March or early April. What's been the reasoning for sliding that to the right?
There's been a lot of changes to the program as we've gone along, a lot of programmatic problems, a little money shifted here and there. It's caused some of the slip, but really what's caused the slip is we've moved up some of the capabilities into early releases. The JDAM and saddle integration was not originally supposed to happen until the next release, but because of the combat need and the ability of our contractors and the SPO to make things happen earlier, we're able to actually put those capabilities into an early release. So we accepted the schedule slip to the left to add those huge combat enablers to the system earlier. So instead of having those things re-released in 08, we moved to an early release in 07, and that's what caused the slip in the schedule. Would you agree with that, Roger?
Yes, especially as it pertains to the JDAM capability. The JDAM capability until recently was not planned to release until the 2008 time period when we did what's referred to 3.3 release of precision engagement. That is now being released. In fact, now at flight test, we're ready to go and getting ready for fielding.
All right, thanks, guys.
And our next question is from the line of Paul Plack with Aero News Network. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a question about the overall A-10 program. It's been extended at least once because of the unique capabilities of the aircraft. What's the current thinking on how long the aircraft will remain in service, especially now that it's entered the digital age?
Okay, this is Colonel Ratty. I'll address that. Our planning factors right now are for 16,000 flight hours and keeping the airplane in the inventory until at least 2028. The A-10 will begin to ramp down as JSF comes into the inventory, but of course that's a bit of a moving target. So our planning factors now are 16,000 hours and 2028. The fleet, as an average, now has about 8,400 hours on it. There's a fairly wide variance in that number, though. We got some airplanes that are in the 6,000 hour range, and others that are a little over 10,000 hours, but the fleet average is about 8,400 hours. So we're about, on average, about halfway, a little over halfway through our service life.
Tomorrow, we'll have the second half of Reporter Q&A with Colonel James Ratty, Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Hansen, and Roger Ilgrand of Lockheed Martin. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.